Welcome to the Cool Friend Live Show. Today, my cool friend is Pete Wahlstrom. Welcome, Pete.
How's it going? I'm nervous. I've never been with a famous YouTuber before.
So. You should be nervous. You should be nervous. I'm really good at it, too. Thanks, everybody, for joining. This is a live show. So if you want to ask Pete a question, just go to the chat. And I have some questions, but please ask questions. To give you all some background, Pete is an outfitter. He owns Momentum River Expeditions. And we started basically guiding and outfitting around the same time. We've known each other for a long time. I just want to clear one thing up. We are actually friends, right?
Yes.
This is because I want to be very authentic with the Cool Friends show. This isn't just like some rando that I caught on the show. You are actually a cool friend. Will you attest to that?
I don't know if I'm cool, but yes, we're definitely friends.
Oh, you're cool. When you wear a hat like that and a haircut like that, you're definitely cool.
Sweet.
But we both started guiding. When did you start guiding on the tee in California?
2000, maybe.
Okay. And when did you start guiding?
91.
Okay. I started guiding in 97. So you started before I did, but we were on the Tuolumne around the same time. And then when did you start Momentum?
The winter of 2003. So 2004 is our first season. So we just finished 20 years, which is nuts.
That is nuts.
Yep.
And that's when I started working for Echo full time. So we've had careers that have sort of parallel, that we've known each other as guides and we've gone to meetings forever. I was thinking about this.
Online reservations for rafting companies.
We didn't invent online reservations, but we helped build the best reservation software out there.
Yep. When we were talking about it, people were like, nobody's ever going to book a multi-day rafting trip online.
It's shocking how much people do. I didn't think that. Like, nobody's going to book a 6-day Middle Fork trip through a website. And now it's more than nobody calls anymore. Yep. It's pretty rare. But we've been going to America Outdoors, this national trade show, for like 20 years. It's been 20 years of that, Pete.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. That hit me
too. Well, the first time I was there, our first year, we didn't have any money. So I snuck in.
Oh, you snuck in and you're just like walking around doing the things. So you started your company in 2003. I was managing a company before I started mine. And so I had the bigger company pay for my way in. So I was lucky. 20 years. Are you going to do some special 20th anniversary hat or 20th anniversary logo?
This was our 20th and I didn't realize it until most of the way through the season. So no, we're going to do something weird, like maybe the 23rd or something.
So one of my guides at the end of the season... This is Northwest 15th season coming up. And one of our guides came to me and said, Zach, we need to do a special anniversary thing for the 50th anniversary. What should we do?
I mean, I'm not a good person to ask because I totally missed our 20th and our 15th.
So you guys are growing as a business or changing as a business. Mm-hmm. I think people are curious. Talk about what you're doing right now. Like how Momentum is changing and things you're doing.
Well, so it's something we've been planning for a while because the dams are being removed on the Klamath River, which is a good thing for the river and I fully support it. It is bittersweet though, because one of our main rivers and kind of like it was the first river, it was our very first river, the Upper Klamath, is no longer going to be raftable in the summertime without the dams. The dams don't store water or the flows aren't going to change, but what's going to change is that stretch requires peaking flows that they put down the river to make electricity, and so those peaking flows won't be there anymore, and the baseline is not enough for a viable commercial rafting trip. So that was our first river. And then we did something, we started this seasonal kind of, I guess for a better word, glampy camp on the river. And so we turned what was traditional 1-day trip into a 3-day trip and became a huge part of our business, like about a third, a little over a third of our business. And so we knew this was coming. This is our last season on the Klamath. So we started searching for other things to add to Momentum and help keep really awesome guides and cool for the guests. So yeah, we're adding Hell's Canyon, which I'm excited about. And then the Kern, which is probably the closest analogy to the Upper Klamath.
That is massive. Like the Kern, you agree. Like Hell's Canyon. If you just call me and say, I'm doing Hell's Canyon, like, wow, that's crazy. The Kern is a massive operation.
Yep. It's massive. And I mean, we'll do it differently. We'll do it in the Momentum way, you know? And I think I'm excited. I think it'll complement what's being done there now and been done in the past. I mean, one of the companies there now is the company that I worked for when I moved to California, when I started getting in California. It's Whitewater Voyages. So kind of the, you know, Voyages used to be a company all through California. Now they're just based in the Kern. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, what we'll do is a little different. So it'll be big, but it won't be as kind of sprawling. We're not really good at, like, you know, tons and tons of day trips and half day trips. It's not what we were built for. And so we'll do some of that, but mostly we'll do 2 day trips as well as the Forks. And we'll do that longer as a 3 day trip.
When you say the momentum, you can do it the Momentum way. What does that mean?
Our thing is to show people wild places in a way that they understand, as opposed to the way that guides or outdoor people understand. And a lot of times that's very different. And so our trips tend to be a little, I guess, for a better word, a little fancier, I guess. And I think one of the things, like, I'm like, in some ways a raging environmentalist. And over time I've changed from, like, trying to, like, you know, I guess, you know, shut people out of places to more being like, the best way places are protected is when a wide variety of people sees and falls in love with them. And so, you know, with river trips, that's like, you know, we want a strong private boating community, people who have the means to get out on their own. We want companies that offer, like, you know, more inexpensive stripped down trips. And then we want companies in the middle. And then we want companies too that offer trips for people that maybe are really afraid of camping and aren't going to go unless things are a little nicer. And so I think if you have that wide range of people, places are better protected. I call it the European model. I think Europe, there's a reason why, you know, as a whole, Europeans believe in climate change. And a big part of it is that, you know, you can be somebody who doesn't ever want to camp or anything and jump in a gondola or a tram and go right to the base of a glacier. You know, we have this amazing wilderness. Europe doesn't have that. You know, I don't want us to get rid of our wilderness in any way, but I do think in areas that aren't wilderness, we can do a better job and have better infrastructure of getting people into these places. So
I feel like we're about to go on a path of conversations you want to have all the time over the years and years. And, like, it's how to run a river trip. Like, what makes a trip great? And what I hear you saying is, like, in order to protect the place, we need a variety of types of people to visit it. Mm-hmm. If it was just like the same, like, if it was just a segment of the population was private boaters, that wouldn't be enough to protect it.
Or no, that'd be horrible.
The same people that will pay $90 for a half day trip, that's like a segment of the population.
Yep.
That's not enough to protect it. You want private boaters. You want commercial guests who are really wealthy. You want commercial guests who are not wealthy. You want people from all over the country to check out these places. Not so much so they're, like, actively advocating for it, because that's we want that, but just so that when something comes up for a vote, or that they're supportive, that they might sign on to something. So there's more people that care about a place.
Yep.
And, like, so you're saying, like, on the Kern River, potentially, if there were 4 outfitters that were exactly the same, that's only serving a certain segment of the population.
That's correct.
And, like, you're going to come in and offer a different style trip that will encourage a different segment of the population to come, which will hopefully develop more people that are supportive of environmentalism and conservation.
Yep. And I think in the same, yep, that's it. And also, I think also in the, you know, the other flip side of that too, is it's good for guides and people in the industry. Like, I think having a variety as well is, you know, the one thing that, you know, you can do when, for instance, with our trips that tend to be more expensive is, you know, the guides that work for us work their asses off. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it's really fucking hard. But they tend to get more money than at other places. And if they want to, it's a job it's become more of a profession, and it's a job that they can do for as long as they want. Some even with a family. And so that's the flip side of that as well. So it gives us a chance to have, you know, not just, you know, how most of us started, I think it was in college or whatever, not just like a fun college job, but it's like, well, maybe I want to keep doing this. So.
And when you say, like, let's go back to the Momentum way, you said just it's fancier. Is that the main thing? Is that it's fancier? Do you want to expand on that? What that means to be fancier?
I think this is the easiest way to say it. We're just very customer focused about, like, how they feel, how it feels to the guest, you know, like, making connections with a guest, like being a really like that amazing host that, you know, like as a guide, your goal is to get to know every single person on that trip and to know them as a human and not, you know, feel like they're just like another guest that you're bringing down the river, but make that emotional connection. And then also like as our systems and the style is built in a way to be like, you know, what is going to make this person comfortable that maybe has never been camping before?
And comfortable is like better tents, better sleeping accommodations, better food.
Yep.
Just like a more comfortable camping experience. Cause some people don't want to sleep on the ground.
Yep. And then just taking, you know, parts, there's like taking parts from their regular life and inserting them into these, you know, wild places, you know, just silly stuff. I mean, you know, like sometimes our menus mirror some of the places you'll find in a city, you know, so they're like, oh, I've had this before, you know, or that kind of thing. So,
yeah. I mean, going back to guides for a second, having every guide get to know every guest, that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a policy? You're like, hey, as a guide on every trip, you need to get to know every guest. Is that kind of top down? You're like, hey, that's a standard you need to meet.
Yep. Yeah. It's part of our like guest review process.
What do you mean guest review process?
When the guests review the trip, you know, they, one of the things that, you know, you see as a guide is if they feel like they made a connection with you.
Do you list the guides? Say, did you make a connection with these guides? You literally and list the guides' names.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it can be hard. Like it can be hard. And we know that as guides, you know, like if you're the gear boater, especially if you're the gear boater on say one of our really fancy trips where it's just like a lot, like we have multiple gear boaters and it's a lot of work to set up, you know, it's like setting up the circus, taking down the circus, you know, it's hard. It's harder to make connections. And so you have to really be strategic with your time. And, you know, when we look through those, like we're not going to like, it's easier to make connections with people when you're in the paddle boats or the stern mounts.
So if somebody's an introvert, would you hire them?
Let's put it. No, I mean, yes. So I can be like, I am an extroverted introvert, which means that.
That sounds made up.
It's not, I think it's, I love being extroverted, but if things are really rough, I need time alone to like rebuild. Well, and no, I know a lot of people that are, I call them extroverted that are like, when things are rough, they need to talk through it with people. They need to be like, talking about their issues and their feelings, all that stuff. That is not me. If I'm like, if things are bad, I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to like sit down and like be alone and rebuild. So, but, I used to do some stuff with outdoor programs. And I remember speaking at one of the like first year, it's like 101 for, you know, college outdoor things. And I remember looking at everybody in the class and everybody knew who I was. And I was like, you know, I came in with like high energy. I'm like, all right, I think I've told you a story, but who loves the outdoors and wild places? And everybody's like, yeah. And then I'd be like, all right, who here loves people? And like three or four people raised their hands. and I was like, all right, you know, all of you who want to be guides, the three or four people who just ran through your hand, if you guys want to be guides, you can be guides. All those other people that didn't raise their hand, like here's all the cool jobs you can do in the outdoors, but you should not be a guide. And I really, truly believe that. I feel like part of the reason why we have things like the Whale Foundation and
Red Side
Foundation is that people get into it for the wrong reason. They get into it because they want to be outside. And then they find out that it is a intensely people like business. It's a people focused job. And it just, for people who aren't like that, it's just really harsh. It's not for them. So just like there's jobs that, you know, I could never be like a wildlife biologist and be out in the field alone all the time. I would go freaking crazy. So.
Because you want to talk to some people.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm extrovert. I love talking to people. I love like learning about people. I love chaos. I love like all the things that go on with lots of people. So I would be bored. Here's an example. I would much rather be on a commercial trip than a private trip.
You've told me that a long time ago. We did a private trip together once a long time ago on the Illinois. And you told me that. And I think about that a lot. When I do both commercial trips and private trips, there's advantages and disadvantages to both.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a private trip, you can just get to camp and take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
You can just like, no, I'm not going to do anything tonight. You guys suck it. You know, or you're like, you can sleep in.
Yep.
On a commercial trip, there's structure.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows the structure. And the logistics are done. Like, the shuttle's taken care of.
Yep.
And the food is bought by somebody else. You show up, there's food ready. It's packed intelligently.
Yep.
And you move as a team. Everybody knows what their job is on the river. If something goes wrong, people are trained to deal with it. On a private trip, yep. That's not necessarily the case.
Yep.
Is that why? I think about this a lot.
It's funny. I stuck that into the conversation, I just realized that my relationship with private trips is more complex than even that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm on commercial trips a lot where I'm like, I'd rather be here than a private trip.
Yeah, yeah.
Private trips get disorganized a little bit. There's not a schedule. There's leadership breakdowns. I'm like, this is just running.
Yeah. Like, I'm a bad hanger-outer. I don't like to just chill. Yeah. So private trips are like a lot of chilling. A lot of time you don't leave the beach until noon. And I'm just like, oh, so bored.
Yeah. No, that I think about that quote. You said it to me a long time ago. And I think about that quite a bit. If a guide wanted to work for you, what should they expect?
I mean, we have a whole long thing that we send guides about, like, what people love and hate about working for us. I guess the big thing is it's really, really hard work, and we're really guest focused. And for the people who it works for, like, we have almost nobody leaves. If people get through a year with us, then they stay. You know, we definitely have people try a year with us and be like, no, this isn't for me. But if someone starts the second year, then they're, in one way or the other, they're going to be with us for a long time. So,
because they bought in, they're like, I get that it's a lot of work, but I see the quality of the trip.
Yep.
And I'm making good money.
Yep. And so, make good money, and they probably like it. Like, some people like it. They like it. Like, there are people, you know, that it's like this. Wow, this is fun. So, it's really hard sometimes. It's exhausting, and it's incredibly physical. It's like, I mean, I think that's what I talk to guides about all the time. Is like, people are like, oh, guiding breaks your body down. I'm like, I know a lot of people who stop guiding, and they look pretty rough now. I don't know if stopping guiding helped them with their body very much, but you do have to treat it like a physical job. Like, you, just like any other physical job, like a, you know, sport almost. Like, you can't just come into the season and not do a little workout or do some things to keep your body healthy. You have to like, you know, treat your body like a tool, just like your brain is.
100%. And I think that it's not necessarily the guiding breaks your body. It's the drinking and the bad diet part mm-hmm. of it that breaks your body.
For sure. Yep.
I think if you guiding is a physical thing. It's good for you to do all that work. And you're outdoors, yep. You're breathing good air. You're like looking at birds and you're around people. It's like a very, you're in the sun, you get sunlight, which people might think is bad, but it's good to get sunlight.
Yep.
But if you combine that with like heavy drinking and just like eating French toast every morning.
Yep.
Like, you have to fuel yourself correctly too, to make yourself last a long time.
Yeah. Food, lack of sleep. You know, I mean, there are some inherent things about guiding that you have to be careful of, like lifting heavy things. You need to do it the right way. You know, and I don't think paddle guiding, I love paddle guiding, and it's how I started. And I think everybody should learn to paddle guide, but I don't think over the long term, it's necessarily the best for you. But for the most part, like, most of the things you do with guiding, like carrying a bucket of water, that's incredibly good for you. Like, it's like all core working. So, and you're not sitting at a desk.
Yeah. It's like an amazing job. But you have to treat it as a physical fitness job, and you have to train ahead of time. You can't just like take the winter and get out of shape and lose your flexibility. You have to keep exercising.
Yep. But we have people that are, you know, in their 50s that are just crushing it, like running circles around some of our younger guides that haven't figured out how to take care of themselves yet.
We have our first question. Thank you for the question. But
the big hits.
I'm turning 50 in a couple months. Didn't you just turn 50? Aren't you like, if you're, I went to your birthday, you're like 9 months ahead of me or something. Like, we're both 50 basically.
Yep.
It's harder. Like, I'm it's harder for me to guide. It's harder for me to maintain that pace. And you're saying there's 50 year olds that are doing better than 20 year olds.
Yep.
I'm noticing it's harder. It's getting physically harder to do the constant work. And maybe that's, I need to be in better shape.
I don't know. I don't feel, I mean, I know as I get, like, I need more sleep. you know, and I don't know if that's because I actually need more sleep or because I don't sleep as good as I used to. Like I remember falling asleep and just literally like not waking up until the alarm went off, like not remembering anything. But now it's like not quite like that. So I can't decide if it's because I need more sleep or it's because I'm not as good a sleeper, but either way I need more time.
Yeah. So Glenn's asked a question. I don't think I understand it. Maybe you do.
What about the big hits? I don't know. I'm assuming it's about whitewater.
I think what he's asking is when you're guiding and you get slammed into something, is that hard on the body?
I am pretty careful about that stuff. Like, I mean, I guided on Cherry Creek and I'm really like protective of myself. Like you're never going to see me. Like I see like the injuries, I see guides get a lot of like cracked ribs and stuff on steeper stuff and big hits. And I'm really like, my hands are in front of me with the oars. I never go way back like this. I'm just really careful about that. I mean, I've had little injuries and for sure. I mean, on Cherry Creek, I was known to, as we went over the drop, to let go of my oars, cause you can on that river. Because you just have four people and so they can bang around and mm-hmm. we have pins and clips and I would literally turn around and hug the the slant board until the boat was stable again. And then I jump up and get back up, but I'm definitely careful about that stuff for sure.
Yeah. But I think that a river with big hits, I think of the Houston Falls and the White Salmon.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine guiding that day in, day out.
I think that would be a puzzle. I've only done that a few times. And I remember thinking that if I was working all the time, it would be a puzzle. And there's definitely like drops like on the tee, you know, that were like that. You know, I can think of like, you know, low water, Clavey Falls, like there's just like a puzzle, like, okay, how am I gonna, you know, his great one is for this is airplane turn on the Cal Salmon is like, I have a way now and it's went through trial and error of like, how can I get through this? And number one, of course, keep people in the boat, but number two, you know, not get crushed by the hit.
And I think those rivers where there's those big hits are like the adrenaline rivers you do in your 20s. I don't know. For me, as I get older, like I'm super happy guiding the Rogue and the Middle Fork and an occasional Illinois trip, anything that has some sort of rapid that's unpredictable where I could take a big hit, I kind of don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And like, for me, guiding is less about the rapids and more about the place. And so I don't need to have the rapids to enjoy the job that I do. I'm thinking guests are the same. Like when people go on vacation, they also don't want to go in rapids that are unpredictable.
Yes. That's what I know the Cal Salmon, one of my favorite rivers in the world, and all the guides love it too. It's everybody wants to be there. And I'm like, well, like Cal Salmon used to be a big deal. There used to be a lot of people up there. And now there's not like, we run more people on the Cal Salmon than like five times what everybody else does combined. And the first thing I always tell guides is to remember that getting people on the Cal Salmon has nothing to do with the whitewater. I know as a guide, you care about the whitewater, but the clients, that is not why they're coming for the full experience.
Really?
Hmm?
Wait, people are booking trips on the Cal Salmon, not because it's the badass rapids, because they just want to go to the place and eat out of your pizza oven and do all the things.
Yep. It's like, I learned that, from, Mark and Lawrence at BOB are like, they're legends. Like get someone like, it's one thing if the place is like, an hour from your house or like easy to get to, but the Cal Salmon is really hard to get to, or the Food La Foo in Chile is really hard to get to. Like, people need to come for the whole experience. Like all that stuff matters. Like feeling like they're part of a community matters. Feeling like they are welcome matters. Feeling like they met really good friends matters. The whitewater is like salt, it's spice.
I mean, that's my point too, is like, you don't need the Cal Salmon as a canvas for a trip. You could do the same thing on a class too. Like, I think my theory about this is like, when we were running river trips as a guide, the river is your canvas. It's your blank canvas.
Yep.
Sometimes you get a really nice canvas, like the Middle Fork of the Salmon, right? And sometimes you get not as nice of a canvas. I think of like the lower Klamath.
Yep.
Like it's not the best on its own river trip.
Right.
The Middle Fork does a lot of the heavy lifting for you. It's just beautiful.
The Grand Canyon is a classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
As a guide, you don't have to paint much. You just make some food and take people down and they will have a great time.
Yep.
A river like the Klamath, you have to make a great trip. And it can be a spectacularly amazing trip, even though like what you're working around isn't as good. Yeah. So it's, I'm really about like we can run amazing trips anywhere. It doesn't have to be like the most badass river there is.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're doing that like Cal Salmon. Why not do that somewhere closer and easier and safer?
Because the Cal Salmon is still unique and beautiful. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And the whitewater is awesome. But it's not like, as a guide, if that's all you're thinking about and that's the thing that you're telling people about, that won't do it.
I'm going to go guide the Cal Salmon because it's badass. I'm a class 5 guide. And like, wait till you do run a freight train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You better be like, as your badass class 5 guide, you better also know how to be a really good cook and how to, you know, run a wine tasting and make people feel like part of the team.
All right, a couple more questions, and then we're going to get to like the question I told you about that we haven't got to, and we'll wrap this one up. I'm trying to keep these cool friend things to under half an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
I've often thought about that at the thought of running oar boats to Cataract Canyon at high water, drop 2 and 3. Yeah, if somebody called me and said you can guide the cataract at 50,000, do I want that liability?
Yeah, I think so. Big water is interesting. I think, you know, it's different than like Cherry Creek or something. Is once you get past a certain water level, like, you know, depending on the size of the river, like a smaller river, 3 or maybe 4,000 CFS, the features start to become more unpredictable, and you can have the perfect line and still be, you know, in hot water, like at lower flows on rivers, like, you know, if I hit this, if I nail this, it's going to be fine, you know, but where you get to higher big water flow, you can, you know, get surprised by things. But I also think, you know, things tend to be less like you start to worry more about long swims and that kind of beating up, you know, as far as like, you know, getting enough air and that kind of thing, as opposed to like, you know, physical, like breaking bones or that kind of stuff. There's just less, there's not rocks. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, like, Cataract Canyon is like, just when it's that big, it's just like, whew, if I flip here, I'm first of all, I better hold on my boat. And second of all, I could be on the top of my boat floating down this river for a while.
And my guest's gone. I mean,
that's another thing. I mean, if you have guests, then you have a whole nother like piece of the puzzle is, you know, what's your containment like? Who do you have in front of you? Yeah. Like, what has been your plan? Or what's the plan that you put in place to keep people from having long swims?
Yeah, no, that's all I've been thinking about is if I flip, how are we going to deal with this?
Yep.
And if I don't feel comfortable with the people around me, like 100%, I just don't want that liability. Like you're kind of rolling the dice, I think, a little bit. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you about this Tuolumne trip I did. I wrote a trip for Arda this August.
Yep.
And I rode a gear boat. It was fun. I remembered the lines, which was awesome. I hadn't been there in 10 years. And Steve was there. And Isaac was there. And the water was dropping. So as we're going to Clavey, the head guide was like, do you need to scout? And I'm like, no, if you'll let me run this out scouting, I'll happily do it.
What was the water level at?
1200.
Oh, okay.
I hadn't seen it in 10 years though, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a specific way you want to enter that 1200. And there's that angle. I'm trying to remember it. There's like an angle so you don't end up hitting.
And it's changed a little bit. It has changed a little bit too.
Oh, gotcha.
So yeah. The entrance has changed a little bit. So, but I remember thinking, if I was the head guide, there is no way I would let somebody who hasn't been here in 10 years run this without scouting.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but as a guide, if you're like, if you'll let me do it, let's dance. Like, yeah, I'll try it. And same thing, like on the Cal Salmon, like as an outfitter, like, oh man, that's a lot of responsibility. It makes me nervous. But if somebody else is running the company and they're like, hey Zach, go guide the Cal Salmon, I'm like, hey, if you trust me, I'm in. Let's do this. Like, because as a guide, if something goes wrong, like, you're certainly responsible.
Yep.
But it's, you can kind of walk away from it a little bit.
Yep.
As the outfitter, that's your problem for, yep, maybe ever.
Yeah. It's something I had to learn as an outfitter, is like, just being in the Cal Salmon when I first started guiding there as an outfitter, I was like, oh my God, I realized now that I'm not just worried about my boat. I'm like literally worried about every single boat coming through.
Yeah. 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 And it's a different sense of responsibility. It was fun being just a guide and just, yep, like,
yeah. And I honestly think now as a guide, and I think a lot of guides have been guiding for a long time, you probably think that way anyway. When you're younger, you're like, you're kind of like self-centered in that way of like, not like, I don't mean like in that you tend to keep, when you're younger, you just you tend to look more closely at things rather than like the bigger picture tends to be, you know, to glance at that a little less. And then as you get older, you tend to be more big picture oriented. So I think even if I was just a guy now, I would be worried about every boat going through or aware of that.
But I can tell you, when I was a guide, I was just a guide for Arda, and they were like, do you want to run without scouting? I'm like, hey, if you trust me to, I'll do it.
But if it was like super high water and you were worried about every other boat getting through there, and the guides were like, oh, we don't need to scout.
If it was 5,000, I would be like, no, I'm scouting.
No, you and you guys should scout too.
Yeah.
I think it's more because like you've seen accidents happen. Like you've seen.
If it was 5,000, I would say even above like 3,000, especially if I've been there 10 years, I'd be like, I'm scouting. It's your trip. Do what you want. Yep. But I'm going to make sure my boat's taken care of. Yep. I can't control the big picture of a trip I'm not the trip leader of.
Yep.
But if I'm the trip leader or it's my business, I'm like, we are all scouting this. And we're going to set like good safety. We're going to like be really careful. Yep. But they would have done the same too. They would have done the same too. He trusted me. And he trusted me that I knew. I mean, I'd run that rapid a lot. It turned out though, when we got there, so what they were going to do is have the paddle boat scout while the gear boats ran. I can't remember why, but we got there and the water was dropping. And so the paddle boats just were ahead of us. They just went.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, we're going, just follow us down. So nobody scouted because the water was dropping.
Yep.
And we were camping Indian. So we had to get past Clavey. Okay. One more question from Jay. Jay is a badass. P. You love him.
The commercial lines.
Do you have an answer to this?
I don't know what to say, like the requirement part. I mean, our guide should take the safest line. I mean, you are responsible for the people in your boat, and they are like, it's different than if you're going with friends or yourself. There's a weird power dynamic when you're guiding commercially or guiding anybody in that. A lot of times you have the knowledge and they want to go big, but they actually don't know the consequences of that. You know, I like to say like everybody thinks they want to be afraid, but most people, when they get afraid, they're like, oh, this sucks. I don't want to feel this way. And you see that a lot with, you know, there's, you know, a lot of guides, especially a guide will go for a swim and they're like, oh, that was amazing. You guests will go for a swim, or somebody who hasn't been in that position. They're like, I saw God. They might not say it, but they're not going to book another river trip. And so I guess if you mean by commercial lines, like the safest route, then that is something that we strongly recommend.
I mean, do you have commercial lines? Do you tell guides where they have to go in certain rapids?
Yeah. I mean, there's like, I don't know, I'm not going to call it a commercial line, but there's like, yeah, this is how you should run the rapid. This is the safest route. And if someone's like, oh, I want to do it this way, then you can have a discussion. He's like, hey, is this a safer route? Or is it like something that you want to do as a guide? And that's not... If it's not safer and there's not like a massive amount of fun difference for the guests, not for you, then yeah, it's something to do on your free time. I don't know, what do you think?
I mean, we don't have a lot of commercial lines. Like
I haven't even heard that term before, actually.
I wonder if I have or not.
I'm like so far out of like the, in some ways it's so weird. The boating world, I guess. I don't know.
Is it a term? I think of rainy.
Yep.
You know, we're not going to run. Yeah, they can't run the falls.
No.
So that's like a rule. The falls is like rolling dice. There's not a whole lot of, even though it's technically class 5 in the book, there's not a lot of skill to it. You just flop over some falls and you make it or you don't.
Yep.
Our new guides run, we ask them to run the fish ladder while they're learning. And as they get better, they can run the mid chute because they need to at certain flows anyway.
With guests or with
without them. Guests. We have all the guests walk around.
Yep.
We have a system for rainy. And on the Rogue, I can't think of anywhere else where it matters. I mean, I guess a Wildcat, it's like, you definitely want to go right, but they all know that. I don't have to like set a policy on the Illinois. It's like super flow dependent.
Mm-hmm.
If a guide wants, like has a bunch of like 25-year-old dudes and they're like, yeah, let's get after it. And there's a safe place to try something hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's talk about it.
Yep.
But not somewhere like Rocky Top. Like where
and most of those places are like a camera, like the hole on the T where you can like even flip if you want, but it's literally like a random hole in the middle of the river with nothing else around it. Like, you know, or a big wave, like that's the kind of thing, you know, it's totally okay. But like going big for the sake of going big in a big rapid is, I think, something to do on your own.
And you and I talked about this a lot, I think a week or two ago, like, is the guy doing it for their own personal needs to fulfill some sort of need or what they want to do, or is the best thing for the guests?
Yeah. And I thought about this, like, imagine if, like, when I guided on Cherry Creek, like I had guilt about it, you know? And I think maybe not Everest guides, because people now know like the dangers, even the guest knows, but like, I don't think most of my guests knew the dangers of being on Cherry Creek. But, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing this for? Like, I'm doing this for myself, my adrenaline rush. Well, I'm not doing it for them.
I mean, the reason people guide Cherry Creek, a lot of them, is to be a Cherry Creek guide. Mm-hmm. You're not guiding Cherry Creek to like talk about butterflies and nature and look at the cold granite. You're doing it to
And most of the guests don't know what they've done. They have no idea how dangerous the thing that they just did.
But I don't think Cherry Creek is that dangerous. I think at high water, like 2000, it's definitely dangerous. But there's never been a commercial fatality on Cherry Creek.
Nope, there's been guide fatalities though.
There have been?
Yeah. I think that the problem with that, there's like a head entrapment.
A head entrapment?
Head entrapment, yeah. And then there's been a foot entrapment, I believe, as well. But it's also like, I think the reason of that, you hear this in like safety things, is like the difference between perceived danger and real danger. And you like to do, like, we like things that have a lot of perceived danger, but less real danger. Mm-hmm. But Cherry Creek is something that has a lot of both. And so it has perceived danger and real danger. And because it has so much perceived, because it looks scary, I think, I mean, like for the most part, like the guides guiding Cherry Creek are freaking, they're amazing. Like if you just took the normal pool of guides and stuck them up there, I think you'd have a lot of accidents.
You'd have a lot of problems.
Yeah, a lot. So I think it's a very dangerous.
But, I mean, that's why I think it's relatively safe, because personally, because the guides that are working there are solid.
But that's not, the run is not safe. It's like the experience has been made safer by these guides. But
I think that also like a lot, like everybody's using big tube boats. They're oar paddle assist. It's like the best equipment, the best guides. And taking a swim there could be really bad.
Yeah. You're doing everything possible to make a very dangerous run, like something that you can commercially run somewhat regularly.
Yeah. Which it's commercially run a lot, mm-hmm. and remarkably few accidents for.
Yep. I mean, and that is a testament to like the same with the Foot Lafu, like, you know, people I've heard, there's a guide say like called Bridge to Bridge Class 3, which is the biggest load of crap I've ever heard. Like it's because of the talent of the guides and also the systems that have been built to, you know, in the case of, you know, the FUTA is to
like keep safety cataracts,
like always
big old boats that just power over everything. Yeah.
Like, just to like, I mean, on that river, for instance, like even as a guide, there's times where you can't even break the eddy line. Like if you don't have a boat to help you get out of the rod, or you just you're gonna keep going.
I mean, if you did bridge to bridge every day in an 18-foot boat, you would have it so dialed. It would feel class 3.
I think that is where, as a guide. Yeah. And that is a mistake. Like, I feel like that's where, say, like the river industry is way far behind on their professionalism as opposed to say the climbing. So in climbing, once somebody does something that hasn't been done before, they don't downgrade it. They just add another number, where we tend to like, oh, it's easy for us now. Now it's only a class 3. Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, we should be adding numbers.
It's always class 4. It's just in the inner circle, everybody's like, oh, it just feels class 3 to me.
Yeah. That's like, it leaks out to the greater circle. And that's then you the have problem. Issues. Yeah, you have issues it's where a, guides who are solid class 4 guides think, oh, I've heard this is only class 4. And then they hurt somebody or they hurt themselves because they weren't ready for this thing that really is class 5. But this guide has gotten very good at it. Like, I just think it's so funny. I feel like we're tearing ourselves down. We get good enough to make a very hard run something that we can do relatively safely over and over. And then instead of saying like, wow, we've gotten better, like, we like downgrade it. It's just, it makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It's an ego thing for sure.
It's not a good ego thing.
It's like a Californian going to Denali calling it 3+.
Right.
you know, it's like, oh, compared to what we do, this isn't that big of a deal. But that's just
sort of
like
the Gali is class four for the most part with consequences.
It's definitely class four.
Just like the Grand is mostly class three.
And I'm going to say the Gali. I mean, I overrate things a little bit now because I feel I compare it to my head. Like class three is the South Fork of the American. Mm-hmm. If you've done the South Fork of the American, you are not ready for the Gali.
Yep.
Right. So it's definitely class four. But what's a classic class four run like to the Tuolumne?
Mm-hmm. The Gali class with one big five, yeah.
Okay, so that's it. Do you call Clavey Falls class five?
Oh yeah, without a doubt, it'll always be a class five.
It's called four plus a lot.
Or four, I know that's ridiculous. I mean, in guidebooks it's a five, and it hasn't been a five, and it has every definition of a five. Just because you've gotten good at it doesn't mean it's a four plus.
I'm with you on this 100%.
I mean, it is a mark of the newness and of our sport and where we need to go professionally.
Like, what's it is better? A mark. Okay. You can help settle an argument between Aaron and I. You know Aaron, my friend Aaron from the T days.
Yep.
What's bedrock on the Grand Canyon?
I haven't done bedrock enough to... And at weird levels to know. I mean, it's a pretty simple pull, but I know at certain levels, I guess it can be super hard.
What's the Grand Canyon in general? Class three or class four?
It's class four.
Yeah.
Even I make fun of it.
Yeah. This is the same thing. Like everybody's like, oh, the Grand Canyon is just class three. And it's a little bit of an ego thing saying my thing at home is harder than this. Right. And I think people use it to I think it gets
the Grand Canyon is a weird one. I mean, because you can I've taken guides down before. I put them in a boat behind me and said, who've rarely never rode in their lives, and I've led them down. And the reason is because it's a pool drop, big water river, where as long as you're lined up at the beginning for most rapids, you're fine. And as long as you're lined at the beginning and you know to turn your boat to hit the thing coming at you, just like that's it, just like turn, you're probably fine. And so that is something unique, I guess, about rivers like the Grand Canyon. You know, there are, you know, just like in climbing, you know, they have all sorts of different, you know, that's a 5.8 crack or a 5.8.
I mean, the difference in the Grand Canyon is you have a week to warm up. It's not like you're jumping right into crystal.
Yep.
You've just voted for a week. You've practiced. So, and so you get a week of practice before you get to the class four-ish stuff. Or maybe there's a little easy class four in the first week. But I feel like by downgrading, we downgrade things, then somebody who runs a class three river, thinks, oh, that's class three, I can go do that. And then they get in trouble.
Yep. And it also makes things less accessible for new people. You know, that's the other thing it does too, is it kind of makes everybody that's been doing it a while just so cool. And it's so hard to get to their level. You're like, oh my God, it's hard to get even to the class four because the new class four used to be class five. Like, it just makes things even harder for people to get into it. The whole thing. It's one of my biggest pet peeves.
The other thing though, is if you call Clavey class five and somebody does class five, somebody does Clavey, does that make them a class five boater?
No, not necessarily. There's so many things involved. I mean, there's so many things involved in being a really solid class five boater. Just like the first time you do a class four rapid doesn't mean you're a class four boater. It means that you're learning.
Okay, let's get ready for the questions.
Here's one I always use with guides real quick.
Okay.
I'm always like, when people start to do that, okay, would you put your mom in a class four? Is this really like when they call a class five a class four? I'm like, okay, would you let, you know, I pick a guide who's like a solid class four guide. Would you let so-and-so take your mom down? And they're like, hell no. And I'm like, no, it's not class five. It's not class four. It's class five.
And this is something that, great discussion. I feel like to make a great trip, the classification of the rapids doesn't matter that much. Like, I almost wish the Illinois was easier because we would run more trips there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, more people could see that canyon. And, the rapids are really cool, but it's the difficulty of the rapids with the variability of the flow makes it kind of a dangerous place. And I wish it was less dangerous. So I'm not going to say I wish the Illinois was easier, because that's probably a stupid thing to say.
Well, I mean, we have it. We have the Rogue.
We do, but the Rogue, the Illinois is better.
They're very similar in a lot of ways. Illinois has a lot less people, and it's a little more, canyoned.
There's no trail along the Illinois. There's an Illinois River Trail, but only reaches the river three times.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Botany on the Illinois, which is better. There's
it's more coastal.
There's more serpentine.
Yep.
The water quality, like it's just better. And I do like the fact that it's a spring run, mm-hmm. which the Rogue is year round, which is awesome. Yep, but it, I don't know, it just makes it like a little bit more rare to get on.
Yep.
But at times I'm like, ah, man, I wish it was just slightly easier. So it'd be easier to run trips there.
Yep.
But probably why it's special. I'm just brainstorming and saying things out loud. Is since fewer people that can go there, you see fewer people.
Yeah, and it's just part of the package. It's part of its specialness. I don't want to say that whitewater is not important, but it's like not, I think guides kind of put it as number one. And to me, it's like, you know, you have this, you know, you make this, you know, amazing pie and you have, you know, 20 ingredients and whitewater is one of the ingredients. And, you know, in a river like the Illy, it's an important ingredient, you know, it's like, but it's not the only ingredient.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's an amazing place. And
yep.
Like, oh yeah, there's hard rapids.
Yep, totally.
Okay, ready for my questions? This is the Cool Friend questions sponsored by GoRafting.com.
Sweet.
We have a sponsor, actually, and you know them.
No comment.
Okay, we're going to go through these pretty quick because okay. We are at 45 minutes and we're blowing past our half an hour time. Where did you start boating and when?
The Poudre River in Colorado, right after I graduated high school.
91.
91 or 90, yep, 91.
That's Colorado's only wildland scenic river.
Yep.
The Poudre.
Yep.
Okay, where did you learn on? What river was like your foundational river that just like your skills got really good on?
Oh, for like whitewater, for boating skills, the Poudre.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, for like learning to how to be an actual guide, I mean, it was Voyages and like Bill's kind of philosophy and some of the guides there, people like, you know, Mark and Lars. And yeah.
Do you feel like you took that whitewater voyages philosophy and ran with it?
Oh, for sure. Like we would not be around. Momentum would not be Momentum without Bill McGinnis.
All right. Orlocks or Pinsaclips?
They're both awesome. If I am on a very difficult river, with six people, meaning I can't let go of my oars and not hit anybody, then you should have pins and clips. If it's really steep, you should have pins and clips. If it's not like that, if it's less difficult, then orlocks are awesome.
What's your favorite boat? Like raft, cataract, kayak, ducky, inflatable tubes, sup, running shoes?
I guess maybe a cat. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not like a gear guy. Oh God, here we go. Gear stuff.
There's a lot of people who have, there's a lot of debate on these things. And so we want to get diverse opinions on these things.
If I am on mellow stuff and not too scared, I tend to have my knife internally. If it's scary, then it's external, but in a way that does not easily get caught up.
So you have different knives for different rivers.
Yeah. I don't do something super scary that often anymore, but if it's super scary, then I want that knife. Easy to get to, but don't want it to caught.
Define super scary.
Anything at super high water, you know. Yep. If it's Cal Salmon, I'm gonna have my knife where I can grab it, but not get caught on a perimeter line.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Favorite PFD?
Any PFD that doesn't go over my head and has high float. I have no desire to have a zip up low float PFD. Oh, no, sorry. I have no desire to have a over my head low float.
You want to zip up the center one.
I don't care where it is. I just don't want to have to take it over take my helmet off or take my hat off. Or I don't want to like make it so hard to change layers that I have to like pull this thing over my head. I want it fast too. I hate watching guides, you know.
I'm the same way.
Life jacket for 30 minutes.
Like we just finished, like we get to do lunch and I'm setting the table up and somebody's still taking their PFD off. And then we're done. We're all like done. We're carrying stuff down the boats and some guy's in the shade, like putting all their gear on, tightening all the little strappy straps. It's like, dude, we have work to do. Let's get the thing off and on. There's only one
PFD. Make your system quick. And
there's only one PFD that's high float that doesn't go over your head.
It has horrible pockets. And it drives me crazy, so I've like modified mine. But yeah, that's the one I have.
But you have the NRS. Mm-hmm. We call it the Justin Bieber. You have the Justin Bieber.
I didn't know this, but I love the Biebs. Hell yeah.
Do you wear it on the road?
Yeah, I wear it everywhere. I only have one life jacket.
That is the nerdiest looking life jacket. With that haircut and that hat, I can't imagine you wearing a Bieber jacket.
One of the coolest things about guiding, and I don't think, and just being a river person, is you never look cool. So don't worry about it.
Oh, come on.
There's nothing
that is cool, not true,
about somebody in any sort of life jacket and helmet. You look like a weird dork.
Dude, I look like a badass.
Dude, jealous.
Hold on. Check out this PFD. This thing is sexy.
That is, oh yeah, super sexy.
You can look badass. Come on.
It's one of the things, like, why I really got into, like, trail running and ultra running is people are dorks and they embrace it.
They just own it. Oh, because you wear those little vest things.
Oh, yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Like, that's why I don't get into trail running, because of those vest things. I will not be caught dead in a vest thing. Okay, how do new boaters get better? If somebody wants to just improve, what do they do?
Man, this is a hard – this is one we've talked about a lot. I don't think that we have a great avenue anymore to getting better. But, I mean, it really depends on where they're at. You know, if they're new, then getting on a day company where you're with a technical river where you're getting lots and lots of reps over and over again. If you've guided for a year or two on something like that, then getting on an overnight – if you're talking about commercial boaters, yeah, getting out of
in general, commercial.
Oh, in general. Yeah. Or in general, you want to find a place where you can do as many laps as you can to start with. And then you start adding in, you know, all the other pieces that go into boating, you know, the overnight stuff and the different, you know, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, the different way to the risk assessments, all that stuff. Taking a swift water class is huge, I think.
Cool. Drain or don't drain the cooler.
This is easy. It's physics.
What's the answer?
When you drain a cooler, you're adding warm energy to the cooler. You're losing your coldness. I mean, it's like I was actually a physics minor, so it's like I never got this one.
Okay, Pete, I'm gonna change your mind on this.
You can't. It's like literally the laws of thermodynamics.
Hey, no, I study engineering. I get this, but I think I can change your mind on this a little bit.
Okay.
We did the study. We had two brand new exact coolers side by side, one with ice, one without ice. Mm-hmm. And the one you didn't drain was crushing it. And then all of a sudden it went downhill faster than the one we drained. And then the one that we drained ran out of ice, and the one that didn't have it caught back up. So there was like 2 days in there. The one that you didn't drain did worse at the end. And I think it's because when the ice is surrounded by water, like the block of ice is like in a bath, the heat transfers really fast because the heat transfers really fast to the water. So if it's just like a block of ice and water is like halfway up, it's doing great. But as soon as it's cut, like the ice is in the water solution, the heat transfers fast.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to see. We have to do some.
We did. We bought like little sensors you put in there, and I have an app on my phone still where we measure. You could check the temperature day, but we graphed it. And so,
do you have a paper on this? I would love to see the full results.
There actually is a paper. Somebody wrote a paper on this.
Hell yes.
Hold on.
We've all done the thing in physics where you put an ice cube in a glass, and the temperature of the water doesn't get above freezing until all the ice is melted.
The temperature. So in the coolers, actually. Interesting enough, I'm looking for this article. Interesting enough, in the coolers, that the water is way higher than the water and air temperature is way higher than I thought. Mm-hmm. I assumed it would be in some sort of equilibrium and all around 32, 35.
Oh, no, you're gonna like that's the difference between coolers and fridges, and that's why you pack them a certain way. You know, cold things should be at the bottom and things.
Yeah, there's
huge, like just like you do, you know, you get aversions. I mean, a cooler is a big inversion, like the coldest air is just going to drop to the bottom.
So. Yeah, the much bigger gradient than I expect. I expected a little bit, but it was surprisingly large.
It's huge.
So I keep articles here, and one of them is this cooler research article. Evaluation of drain versus undrained coolers. Now, this isn't my same data, and we're not going to go through this because I have to relive all the stuff, but there has been an article about it.
I'll read it tonight before I go to bed.
And it says, the result of this study show that draining water from a cooler significantly degrades cooling performance in a hot environment.
So it does degrade.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't drain the cooler.
Until the very, this is the thing. They didn't go, I don't know if they went all the way. You have to read the whole thing.
It says the conclusion that you shouldn't drain the cooler.
But I'm gonna say, like, we did the studies to the end of the ice. And when the ice is fully in a water, it's too much. You got it. Like, so I'm a partial drainer now.
So you're going to say, I'm going to read this and then I'm going to decide on a different conclusion that it came up with.
I read this while I was doing the experiment because somebody sent it to me. I'm like, oh, the answer is here. And then I was super cocky. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't, because I always thought it was don't drain too, because I, you know, science.
Yep.
And I was like super cocky about the answers. I was talking some major shit. And then all of a sudden the temperature, like, it changed. I was like, yep. Oh, what just happened? And what happened was the block of ice was in water, and that, like, it was just transferring that heat right through the water to the side of the cooler.
Yep.
So I'm going to say we want to redo the test. We haven't done it yet, where if the water is ever at the halfway up the ice cube, then drain it a little bit. Never let the water get higher than halfway up the ice cube. I think that's the best. So it's not either one. So this is a trick question. It's not drain or don't drain. It's like drain a little bit here and there.
How about if you have your ice frozen in ice cream, big ice cream buckets, and so there's no water leaks at all? So it's just the ice floating in the bucket.
This is the one I really want to do because I think that is the right answer. And so, like, there's these
you put our ice in a waterproof bag.
You know those water jugs we all probably use that are like $50 now? Well, those are made to freeze ice in. Like, they're designed, like, most water jugs can't freeze ice. And those fit perfectly in the coolers most of us use.
Yep.
And so I bought a freezer so our guides would freeze ice in them and then put those in the bottom of the coolers because I'm thinking the ice will last longer. And when it's drained, you have cold water. It's like the best thing ever. The guides hate it. Like, multiple seasons, I've tried to force them to do it. And they're all like, it's not as cold. It's not as good. It's not that great.
They swear you need your freezer set to, like, nuke. But yeah.
We did. Mm-hmm. So the study I want to do is comparing, like, pre-frozen ice in a water jug to crappy store-bought ice.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you on this one, on that one for sure. Okay, we're almost done with the questions, and I'll let you go. Okay, advice for boat ramps.
Less is better.
Less boat ramps is better?
Less, like, rigmarole. You know, it's we don't have to back boats all the way into the water. It's good exercise to carry stuff every once in a while.
Oh, so don't back trailers into the water.
It's fine. We have them in the Rogue and it works great, but I don't know. I think we don't need to have, like, these giant, you know, concrete things. I mean, it's fine to have a few of them, but if I had my, like, it would be far less.
Wait, if it's up to you, boat ramps would be more difficult to use.
They would be less rigmarole. And yes, yeah, so you'd have to be more physical.
So you had to carry your boats up 20 feet up the hill.
When I look at the boating community as a whole, I feel like it would be good for them. Sorry, I'm going to get killed.
Brutal. Did you just said that publicly? Am I going to have to go delete that later?
That is all good.
That is brutal. Wait, do you think fewer people would go boating and it would make rivers?
No, I just think it's like a...
You think they need, like, a little boot camp workout?
Like, the thing about rafting is you're literally sitting on your butt for the most of the day. Like, it's like you got to do something. You got to do something physical besides rowing. You have great arms and shoulders, but otherwise you're just sitting on your butt.
All right, I'm going to move past this one. I feel like we're going to get do you have any current boating goals?
Not really. Not just like specifically boating, no.
I don't know. Like, yeah. Okay. And then the last one, what's your favorite raft brand?
I'm going to go local and just keep with Sotar. It's the boats we use. They're good. We use other boats too. Like, we use some NRS ones that are awesome for that particular, like, if you're for to roll them or put them in planes, which we do for some. Yeah.
Just today I bought two Sotars. You know the Sotar Rogue series boats?
Mm-mm.
Have you seen those? They're super light material and they have a mesh floor instead of a regular.
Oh yeah. So, yeah.
And they're for travel. They're super light.
Yep.
To travel with. And so I got two. I think I'm gonna get 13 footers. They're gonna be like 60 pounds.
That's amazing.
For a 13 foot raft, which they're useful for, like, a lot of things. One of them is just easier to load and unload.
Yep.
Like when you're doing a stack of rafts, it's like, oh, let's put the super light ones on top of the stack and we're bringing a bunch of boats. I'm pretty jazzed on those boats.
Yep. Yeah, they just have a lot less. They can hold less weight.
Yeah, they're not going to make great gear boats. That's a good point.
Yeah, even with people too, you're going to be riding lower. So
yeah, I mean, we're getting them for rowing schools. For
that makes perfect sense. Although that's funny, they'll probably like track differently, but yeah, whatever.
I took it on the water yesterday before I bought one. I tested one out, took it out. They definitely act like more like a cat. It's like in between a rat and a cat.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which there's advantages to like raptors are not gonna like it for some reasons. Cat boaters not gonna like it for some reasons. But as a boat, it's actually really cool.
Yep.
Like it's not, it doesn't compare to what you're used to, but it's its own really cool, amazing thing.
Totally.
I'm pretty jazzed on. Pete, you survived. The cool friend live show.
Except for my last comment.
That was brutal. I'm gonna just clip that one part. Uh-huh. Put that on Instagram and say, for more of this, watch the whole show. Ouch. But thanks for doing this. Any final words before we move on? Anything you want to share before we move on?
No, that was great.
But you got canceled.
Can't cancel it. Damn it.
Oh, we got a good show. That's the opposite of canceling you. But thanks everybody for watching the show. Those of you that watched it live, thanks for adding some comments. Like, subscribe, do all the things, and we'll see you with our next cool friend. I might be out of cool friends. This might be the last episode. All right, bye, everyone. You can stay here, P. I'm gonna hang up on everybody else. You can stay here.